Welcome back or welcome front if it's the first time joining us. This is the Adventure Game Hotspot podcast. Joshua Cleveland over here. We've got our friend Jeff coming back to co-host. And we got our friend Eric. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this. I've been looking forward to it for a while. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man. It feels like the first day of spring out here in Seattle. So,
here too. I literally was just thinking to myself, it's technically winter and we're outside wearing shorts right now and working and planting trees. Literally, I just was planting a tree like an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, about 70 degrees. So, and we're Eric and I are both PNW people. So,
yep.
You guys, you know, the Bible says to not be jealous, but you're making me jealous. So, you know, you're going to have to speak with God on this one.
Right out of the gate. Well, where do you actually live? I don't remember.
Oh, where am I? Oh, I am in the Tornado Alley in Springfield, Missouri.
Oh, my God.
Right in the middle of the country. However, I hail from Anaheim, California. So I'm used to good weather. Uh-huh. And, but it's like 50 degrees today. It's got a bit chilly, but it's getting better as we go
that
along.
Time of year. Yeah.
Now I'll preface everything that we say here and say that, boy, I just listened to the Classic Gamers Guild podcast with you. And I am, I'm pretty disappointed that they got you first because A, they're better than us, and B, they're more thorough than us, and they're funnier than us. So, if you guys want to have some fun, listen to this and then listen to that one, and I'll try to fit a little bit stuff that we haven't talked about.
Yeah,
we'll
that's
see
always
if Jeff can
see
us.
Well,
I haven't had a chance to listen to the podcast yet, so I'm probably gonna. I was just warning Eric before we started taping that I'm probably gonna retread a lot of the questions he's already been asked. So apologies, Anna and Paul. We love you.
Yeah. Well, let's roll then. Tell us about yourself, Eric.
Well, I have been working with and on different varying music projects in varying capacities over the years, I guess you could say. I've played in orchestras, viola, here and there, mostly the Gonzaga Orchestra.
Oh,
Couple Dogs. And that was I did that for a few years off and on, and that was kind of fun. Played piano. I started playing piano when I was about 7, and just studying music theory books, and it just kind of is something that stuck with me, and I've been messing with it and doing things here and there pretty much ever since then. And so I guess 35 years. God, I'm old. And the latest thing, I finally, after working with DAWs, digital audio workstation softwares, I finally realized that I love King's Quest. And I would play songs from King's Quest 5 before I got 6, of course, on the piano when I was, God, 8, 9, 10 years old, and just by ear. And it took me all these years, up to like a couple of years ago when I started working on remastering King's Quest 5, this one up here behind me, and to realize that maybe this is something that I would be good at and that I would enjoy doing. And so I got all the MIDI data from King's Quest 5, and I just loaded it up into my DAW and started working on it. And before you know it, I had full complete songs, and they started sounding really good, and I just kept working and tweaking, and I'm like, wow, I could probably just do this whole game while I'm at it, you know what I mean? So I kept up with it, gained a lot of community support. Ken Allen, the original composer, and Mark Siebert, of course, they did 5, and they were fully behind me. I got a ton of community support. Even Ken and Roberta Williams, whom I met in Seattle a couple of year and a half ago, and that was cool because we had the copies pressed and physically in people's hands by then, and I actually got mine signed, a bunch of signatures, including Roberta. So I'm trying to do the same with 6 now, as far as having it ready for the fanfare in July, and I think we'll be pushing it a little close, but we might be able to get it. So that's my goal. So anyway, long story short, I remastered King's Quest 5 It was a successfully crowdfunded campaign. And then, as soon as that was done, I literally just dove right into six, and I've been doing the same for the past couple of years. And I spent the last couple of years working on it, and it was a lot more of a challenge. Just because we have a whole new, completely different composer now. We're working with Chris Braman. Mark Siebert did some of it, Girl in the Tower, obviously. And some other bits here and there. There were some other Sierra composers, but it was heavily, primarily Mark. I'm sorry, Chris Braman, is who I'm saying. And his music is just such a different style. And it took a lot more effort from me to really get it right. He uses way more percussion, which is one of my weak points. So I learned a lot, by working on his stuff. And I've also just learned a lot and gained a lot of skill and insight, which I think if you're doing something basically nightly for 2 years straight, you're going to get better at it. So that's kind of what happened. So the end result of six has turned out quite a bit better than I was actually hoping for, and a lot better than the way five sounds. So much so that the vinyl of five will always be there. I'm not going to redo another vinyl, but I have every intention of mastering five
Remastering,
again. Yeah, I'm going to redo five again, at least, and release it digitally. But yeah, the vinyl will stay what it is forever. But so yeah, I love working on this music. Probably next, now that six is done and we're working on the final little bits of mastering, the campaign is live at this point. And it's off to a great start. But probably next, I'm probably going to do King's Quest 4. If I'm gonna do another one, or A Quest for Glory. I haven't decided yet. Maybe one of those two.
Both really good choices.
Yeah.
And King's Quest 4, I believe was King's Quest 4, correct me if I'm wrong, the first MT32 soundtrack.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and they really took full advantage of that hardware too. So that's a gorgeous score, and I think they got a professional film composer to do it, right?
Or I need to look up, and this is I'm definitely a little weak on my who has done what as far as Sierra music compared to some other people in the community who might know better than me, but yeah, it's not, I want to say it's Goldstein, but I'm
Yeah,
probably
William Goldstein or Goldman. I'm ashamed.
Goldstein. Yeah, you're probably going to get a bunch of emails telling me that I'm
Eric,
wrong.
just to let you know, I also am very weak on those. That's why we
Okay.
brought Jeff along.
Okay,
Jeff
good.
is gonna save the day for
Well,
both of us, maybe.
Eric is definitely the bigger music nerd, unfortunately,
Well,
I hate to say.
and it sucks because I've met so many of these people, and I should know who they are or
Well, to
what
be fair,
they've
I think
done. You know what I
William
mean?
Goldstein was just brought on as a one-off to kind of showcase the MT32 for King's Quest 4. And Sierra always did
Okay.
a really good job of kind of showcasing new technology with their games, particularly with, I feel like, with the King's Quest series, which was sort of their flagship. They were
Yeah.
always pushing to the next technological
Yeah. And this
that
came
was
up in the
great though.
podcast that I just did with Paul and Anna too.
Don't do that to us. We're starting
You're gonna
already.
exhaust yourself, aren't
Well, no, this is just me trying to correct a mistake that I made, if I may.
Please.
I said, because of course King's Quest Mask of Eternity came up, which is not King's Quest 8, and I don't even care what Ken Williams says because it's not labeled that anywhere on the box. It's Mask of Eternity, and I refuse to call it 8. But it I was saying in that end, Quest for Glory 5, I was like, that was such an awkward time for Sierra, like that whole Polygon era, but they were just always wanting to be bleeding edge. And I refer to that as the late 80s, and I meant to say 90s. So for all of those who listen to both, obviously I meant 90s. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting time, that whole later 90s era, moving into the 3D accelerator
Well, and I remember with
age.
Quest for Glory 5, it came with the CD audio soundtrack. And that was, yeah, it was beautiful. It was like they were trying to sort of, I think they started doing that with some of the FMV stuff. Like, I think like Gabriel Knight 2 moved away from MIDI and into recorded audio, which was still, I believe, was still using MIDI technology, but just being recorded live, right? Or at least sequenced and recorded over air or
I
whatever.
haven't dug into the GK music enough yet to know that. I think Robert Holmes would be our guy.
Sure.
That
But
was an
anyway,
era.
oh,
Go
I
ahead.
was going to say that was an era where everybody, well, the industry people wanted it to advance, but it just they weren't ready. They weren't
Yeah.
ready to advance in any aspect, in my opinion, in graphics, in music, or any of those technological areas. That would always come a couple of years later where it really started getting better. But
Well,
that
if you
era, you
think
said,
about
it
it,
was
like,
awkward. Yeah.
yeah, that has to be like the case with anything that's pioneering in nature, because literally no one's doing it. I mean, we have this new technology. Here's what it can do. How can we use this in games? And someone just took a stab in the dark, and it was usually Ken Williams, like,
Yeah.
you
Well,
know.
he wanted to be the pathfinder, Yeah.
for sure.
I think, for better or worse, with some mixed results, and I think when Sierra kind of got purchased, also that sort of changed things a bit because they were, I think with their adventure games, they were kind of forced in this predicament by like kind of a bigger kind of multinational corporation to make their more cerebral games compete with the FPS genre, which was like the
Yeah, that too.
rule of the roost. So we had to have 3D graphics and support 3D accelerators and do all this kind of wild experimentation to make 3D graphics and combat and stuff like that work in an adventure game context. And I think we see some of the seeds of what came later with action adventure games. Like you look at games like God of War or what's the Jedi one, that sort of thing where you're solving puzzles and also exploring in a 3D space. You can kind of see the roots of those in like Mask of Eternity or Quest for Glory 5 or what have you. But yeah,
Sure.
it wasn't the best sell for hardcore adventure game fans at the time, I don't think.
And that's the disconnect right there. Exactly. Yeah.
But the
So let me
music
ask.
was never a problem.
Hmm.
Let me ask you, Jeff. So you have the King's Quest 5 vinyl that Yeah, it's right behind me. I
Eric
propped it up.
released.
Oh,
Or
there it is. Yep.
what do you think of it? Be honest. Be honest.
Me to disconnect so you can speak freely?
It's gorgeous. Let me sit here and correct you on some things you should have done differently. No, I don't know what Eric's talking about. He has his own artist regrets, obviously, but I think that that's one of those things where every musician, every artist kind of looks back at their previous work and goes, oh, that sucks. Because there's absolutely nothing wrong with
Yes.
the King's Quest vinyl. It's absolutely gorgeous. When I listen to it,
Oh,
and
thank
when
you.
I've now listened to the King's Quest 6 project, which is also, granted, it's more exciting to me right now because it's new. But, it has that nostalgic feeling where you're listening to it, you're remembering it how you remembered it when you were playing it as a kid, And I think that's the most important thing for a project like this. I don't know how, if that was sort of one of the things you were going for to kind of recapture that essence of like playing this game for the first time.
Yeah, I with five, it was much easier, and that's because it was much more of a linear game, if you think about it, right? Once you're in the mountains or at the beach, you're not going back, no matter what.
No going
So,
back.
as with six, there are very few places where you're kind of in a stuck position where you don't have the ability to literally bounce to any of the islands at any given time. So it's much more of a less linear game until the end game. End game's linear, but it just kind of has to be by nature. But so with five, I was able to line it out more in a style where, yes, it was one song after the other that sequentially played as you would expect to hear it throughout the game. With six, I couldn't do that as easily. So what I did is I just took each island and played a song that would have gone from one screen to the next naturally. But mind you could hear any of those songs in any order from on the island pretty much.
And
So
that actually was a confusing thing for me when looking at your track listing, because the first thing I wanted to do when you linked me to the audio files for this project was listen to the Nightmare theme, which is one of my all-time favorite
it's
adventure
so
game.
good.
It's
But
just
it's on the
gorgeous.
Mists track, isn't it?
Yeah, if you haven't listened to it, go listen to it, or better yet, go play King's Quest VI front to back. But yeah, it's absolutely a beautiful piece of music. You completely did it justice. It's beautiful. I had a hard time finding it though, because I think you put it under
Yeah, it's on the
Isle
list
of
there.
Mists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and so
But
there's
it
a
makes
couple
sense
of reasons.
sequentially, you know,
Yeah,
but
sequentially it would have. And the reason with vinyl, it's tricky. So I was forced to do that in a way. But I made sure, like you said, to put it in a spot where it would have made sense in the game. Because the next thing you're gonna do after Mists is go and do Nightmare. So, and it's the only place it physically fit on the vinyl. So I kind of had to squeeze it in there, even though I realize it's Sacred Mountain. But yeah, I have listened, especially towards the end, you find yourself listening to the tracks over and over and over again to find any little thing that you can tweak at the very last second before we send it off to the presses, right? And I kid you not, every time Nightmare comes up, it's goosebumps for me. It's such an amazing piece of music. Chris Raymond just did the song justice, that's for sure.
and I
Yeah.
think he's such a unique sound. Like you were saying, he's a very different composer than I feel like the King's Quest V soundtrack is maybe a little more like Baroque, maybe a little more chambery in some parts. I'm not sure if that's the right descriptor for it, but I feel like King's Quest VI soundtrack is maybe more minimalist in terms of instrumentation. Can you speak to that a little bit? Is that true, or am I way off base? I feel like there's less orchestral influence, maybe, and more like kind of melodic.
Yeah, I think the way I would describe it if I had to compare the two side by side would be, yeah, there were definitely more orchestral in nature on the five side as far as a base of instruments, whereas with six, I'm reaching out into the far abysses of my samples to find something that's going to match or make sense for what I'm hearing in six, because a lot of it's just a lot more percussive, I guess you could say. He doesn't Chris Raymond does a lot more with the use of like ambient percussion, I guess we'll just put it that way. So the music kind of that things are kind of based on that, and Paul and Anna and I talked about that a little bit as well, like because Paul was pretty curious about the whole percussion side of things, and Chris Braman definitely does it wonders. And that was me with percussion kind of being a weak spot in my orchestral knowledge that I learned a ton just by working on his stuff. You know what I mean? It was very enlightening. So, but
Now,
yeah, it's different.
go ahead. All your percussion was sequenced, right? You weren't playing any live stuff,
Yep,
right?
all of it. And Trolls, Space Quest historian, played the. There are a couple songs which are just a straight up like rock drum kit. We're talking Black Widow. He played the drums on that, and they were original. He didn't play note by note. It was a souped up version, which I love.
Yeah.
Completely love how Trolls' drums turned out. And he also did a drum stem or track for the Dance of the Bones and the Realm of the Dead, where
Oh,
the
that's
skeletons dance.
great.
Very fitting. But yeah, I couldn't be happier with how this turned out. He did great.
So for those that don't know exactly what the project is, and we've already discussed a little bit of it, but this isn't a remastered music of the original games. You have re-recorded yourself and then made some adjustments, correct? Explain what the project
Yeah.
is verbatim to someone who hasn't heard in the past.
Yeah, so I guess the process is I start with the game MIDI data that's been extracted directly from the game and cleaned up. And a lot of the stems, individual tracks that each instrument's notes are played on, are labeled fairly well and consistently throughout each piece. So my first job is to load up the MIDI data and then try to identify what each of the tracks are doing or what they're playing based off of how they're titled or what they sound like compared to the original. So I will apply a violin stem or sample to the violin stem, for example, and just go through the list. listen to it, hear how it sounds, maybe move a couple of notes around just based on how my samples react, things like that. Get it all lined up, get it sounding good. And then I'm removing all the automation that also comes across in the MIDI data, so I can do my own and keep it consistent. Like, for instance, if there's a bunch of panning left and right that's programmed, pre-programmed in, because that's with back in the day, that's really the only way you had to do it. Where in this, when you're doing it at this level, it's you do all that stuff kind of later or with automation that's done differently, I guess you could say. So I basically strip everything, make everything as bare as possible, get it back to basics, and then just kind of build it back up from there. Build in swells. I'm trying to make things sound like they're actually being played by people instead of just a trumpet playing a note for 3 seconds that never changes in velocity. Sounds pretty crappy to one that you're doing a nice swell on, you know what I mean? That type of thing, building in like natural effect. So I spent a lot of time doing that. Then it's sent, then I compile all of the songs on any given island, if you will, into one large track. So in the end, we really have just nine big tracks on this one, one for each island, and then there's one for the intro sequences, and then one for the castle and the finale, and then an additional, which we'll get into in a minute here. Girl in the Tower, which is being redone by Trolls' group Error 47. But so I get everything ready, and consolidated into a big giant track. They're about 20 or so minutes because it's covering a bunch of songs for each island, and that's about the max you can put on side of a vinyl. And send it off to John Paul, who does all the mastering for us on all of these projects that we're doing, basically. He lays down his magic on everything, and that's where it takes it from like your contrast setting at like a 20 to your contrast at 120. He brightens everything up, and it's amazing. So after that, it's export to 24-bit wave and then upload to the campaign and hope people back us, I guess.
And I'm
So
sure we'll be providing a link to the campaign in the description. Can you tell us a little bit about the crowdfunding process, how it worked last time, and maybe how it's a little different this time, and what people can do to help make this project come to fruition?
sure. So last time, yes, pretty much every project that we, and by we, I mean Two Guys Records, the King's Chill, Space Quest Records, that have all been done by mostly by Trolls. I'm releasing these under that label. I still have my own Magic Map Studio label, but we did everything under Crates. It was Crates. They have since stopped taking new orders. I'm not sure if they're just not getting burnt out or what may have happened there, but because of that, we had to find a new avenue. And I knew of one, a couple, and decided to end up going with Diggers. So we're at Diggers Factory for this campaign now. They're in France. Their process is a little bit different, but at the same time, their pricing is also way better. So we're actually able to release King's Quest VI and Ode to the Isles for about 20% less than almost 20% less than what we were funding King's Quest V at. So save a little money there, and basically it's just go to diggersfactory.com and search for King's Quest 6 and the campaign pops right up, or it's bit.ly / KQ6 vinyl, 6 being the number, not the Roman numeral. It pulls it up there and you can see all the details. We have amazing artists. This time, same as last time, Bruce Bernaysi, who did the sleeve art and the map that you can see behind me here, and the back cover. And then we have Cy Mistage did the vinyl labels, and kind of like a grayscale line art style. Really beautiful. I'm super happy. Exactly what I had in my mind. She basically just like extracted the images and drew them up for me. She's great.
Can
I
we
love
talk a
how.
little bit about getting Bruce on board? Because Bruce is, I mean, you must feel really lucky and blessed to have an artist like Bruce involved in your projects, because he's a big name in fantasy art. He does some iconic pieces for Dungeons and Dragons, Magic the Gathering, Numenera, all this kind of stuff. So, how did that come to be?
He, well, besides the fact that him and I have the same birthday, not that that matters, but he, I don't know, he's just been in our circles, and I've known him for years, like a long time, I guess 5 or 6 years now, I guess I could say. And I just, once I started doing these campaigns, I asked if he'd be interested in doing them, and what he drew up for a five. I mean, look at this thing behind me. It glows, right? The artwork on King's Quest V is, it's ridiculous. It literally shines in the dark. So I couldn't not have him do six again, and I'm more than happy. I originally, because if you, this is the, in five, it's the artwork from like the front box art of the game. So originally I sent everything over to Bruce for six, and I'm like, can you do a rendition or a version of the KQ6 box art? And he sat on it for a while, but he's never been, caricatures have never really been his main theme. Or I don't want to say strong suit, because he can totally do them, and he did. If you flip KQ6 over and look at the back, he can obviously do caricatures, but it just wasn't working out right for how it was supposed to look. And six also has like a smaller image centered around the giant color, whatever color of KQ6 you end up getting. So it's just, it wasn't looking right. And he's like, well, what if we went with the idea of, for all of your releases, each one will just have a castle and the as the theme. So I thought about it, and I was like, wow, that was a really great idea. So for five, we have the Ice Queen's castle, obviously. And with six, we're doing the Castle of the Crown, and I suppose with all the other ones, if you think about it, there's a castle in all the other King's Quests, so it'd be pretty easy to continue that theme as we continue doing these records. But yeah, I couldn't be happier to have Bruce along for the ride here. I think it, I've heard of people who have backed five just because of the art. If that
They
answers
wanted
your
that.
question.
Well, I
They
think
wanted
that's in
that.
their collection.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting thing about vinyl collectors. Now, this is one of my weak spots. I don't collect a lot of big box games or, cartridges or anything like that, but I have a huge soft spot for vinyl, and it's an expensive hobby. But you were talking about the difference between the diggers and crates and the pricing. Just to clarify for anyone who's considering backing this project, when you back the project, you're guaranteed a copy of the soundtrack if the project meets its funding goal. So you're basically just pre-ordering. And the pre-order, I believe, is set, US dollars is set for $39.99, I believe.
Straight 39. Yep.
Yeah, which is that's just MSRP for a vinyl like this project. If you go to a record store, I mean, that's basically what you would expect to pay. So,
And that is not even covering the cost of production. Like, if
right.
we hit the line and make the
Really?
200 that we need, it's, I still have to send them a little bit more just to get impressed, because it's expensive, but you're also getting a double vinyl and transparent. And if you go look at the campaign, you'll see the whole entire art of everything. But just to mention it on the podcast here as well, it's, the vinyls are like a transparent, like dark bluish, and then, but there's also a transparent green blob in the middle of that. So it literally looks like a green isle in the ocean, and every vinyl is
Oh,
physically going to be a differently shaped island.
that's, yeah,
Just
that's so
art
cool.
on,
On art. I love it.
yeah. You got to pile up the layers of the art on top of each other.
I mean, I think that, when it's inevitable to talk about, video game vinyl and kind of collecting game vinyl when we're talking about a project like this, because it's obviously it's a pretty big and growing scene. There's whole groups on Facebook, Reddit about collecting vinyl with thousands and thousands of members. It's kind of become its own sort of subculture, and I think that the community you guys have kind of built with Two Guys Rep Records, Magic Map Studios, where you've done all these King's Quest, Space Quest, Gabriel Knight, kind of Sierra focused projects has really been a pretty unique thing for the adventure game community. I mean, that's not something you would expect to see from such a niche audience as this, but we're really kind of carrying the torch there.
Completely. And I am super honored to be a part of that. I just started doing something I loved, and I hoped people would love it as much as I did, or at least making it. And it's just kind of stuck and it's working, and I'm rolling with it as long as it as the community is there to support it. I'll keep doing them. It's yeah. And it is a niche of a niche of a niche, right? It's just it's pretty narrow field, but we gotta be
Not
somebody's
even
gotta be there
all
to
adventure
represent
game
it.
fans are probably vinyl collectors. A lot of them
Yeah.
probably, who cares? But
I get asked all the time if I, and I'm sure Trolls does too, like if we're going to release anything on CD or cassette, which I think I might, especially when I get KQ5 redone again. I'll probably do at least CDs and we'll see about cassettes.
oh, cassettes would be cool. Come on,
But I know
eight
they are,
track.
but yeah, I
Just
mean,
go at this.
how far back are we
Let's
going
talk
here, right?
about the what I am. I'm fascinated with Girl in the Tower track that you guys have been working on.
Yes.
Tell us what we have going on here.
Okay, so let's be honest, you can't have a King's Quest 6 soundtrack remaster without Girl in the Tower, right? Like how many other video game songs do you know of that have ended up on the radio? I'm sure there are some, and you'll probably get more emails about me being wrong. But
Should it have is another question.
well, and then yeah, but then well, yeah, that's a great question. Good point. But at the same time, I mean, it's not only that, it's also a retro adventure game, you know. It follows that same niche of niche, but it's I knew that we had to do something epic with it. And I also knew that that probably wasn't going to be me, because there are a lot of people who have covered that song and have done a really great job at it. But
And a lot of real poor jobs
oh yeah,
at
there's a lot of yeah, let's be
the
honest.
metal version out there. I'm sure a lot of fans are familiar with the one
Is
metal versions.
hard. It is a hard song. The song to sing. I've been in
Yeah.
music for a long time. I've been singing for a long time. I goofed around with it just to kind of see if I can hold any type of court over at the fanfare to do it. I said, nope,
Oh no.
this ain't
That's
happening.
bravery there. Wow.
Yeah, it's quite something. So I just knew I couldn't, it wasn't gonna be me. So I reached out again to Trolls and his Era 47 group, which is the group that produced and made the Seventh Guest and 11th Hour soundtrack that
Keeps on.
is just finished. We actually, I feel like we finished the final versions of all our tracks on the same week. King's Quest 6 and Seventh Guest, 11th Hour was all pretty much wrapped up on that same week. It was kind of cool. But that turned out amazingly well as well. That was a Kickstarter campaign that was very successful. And I played some violin and viola on that as well, I think in about maybe half-ish or so of the tracks. So you guys should check that out. It was kind of fun to do. But I reached out to them and I said, "You guys, we need a Girl in the Tower cover. Are you in?" And it was Sarah, Kelly, Jackie Stewart, Trolls. We have Fred Olson adding a bunch of synth work. He actually co-wrote it. And gosh, I wish I could remember. We have another guy playing bass, and I
Wrote
don't know
this
his real
version.
name. For what?
Who wrote this version of it?
Yeah, exactly. And there's another guy in the group. He's a band member who plays bass. I don't know his real name because he has a handle. So I don't actually know what it is. I should look that up. He's gonna be on it as well. And then of course John Paul, shredding on the guitar and doing the mastering of it all. But what they've come up with and what they've crammed into like 6.5 minutes is just incredible. It's like five or six different styles of music all crammed into one. And of course we have Jackie. She's like an opera singer, right? Belting out the female side of it. And Jackie is incredible with what they did on the male vocal side of it. And just amazing. I'm so pleased with how it's turning out. I do have it uploaded to our Bandcamp, but it's not the final version. Whenever I do updates, I'll definitely email all the supporters and backers so they know, hey, there's a new version, because they're literally in the middle of finalizing everything and finishing it all up. So what you hear now will not be the final,
Well,
but I'm super pleased with it.
I can see where it's gonna be, and it's already really fun to listen to as is. I'm telling you,
Yeah,
I'm super
it
excited. We gotta get Jackie,
is.
and
Sarah.
is Sarah gonna be at the fanfare
I don't
in
know how
March?
she wouldn't be. She's just down in Portland. And
She's
her
down.
husband actually played on the soundtrack as well. He played some bass clarinet and flute for me on some of the Realm of the Dead stuff. So
And just
Friday night
a
is the
correction,
fun
I
night.
believe Eric had said that Jackie did the male part, Jackie did the female part. I think you met Jackie and Sarah a minute ago, but Sarah Kelly is doing the female part on that, right?
Is Sarah
Yep.
she you said that she's like an opera singer? Is that right?
I think she's done opera. Yeah, she's definitely classically trained, and what
Hmm.
she's been belting out on our projects is, yeah, I wouldn't doubt it for a second. She's amazing.
Well, we'll have to get them up there on Friday night for the
Yeah,
media,
that
the
would be
fun night.
incredible. Have a do live duet, right?
Oh man.
Yeah, I guess, well, maybe we could come. What we I don't know. Well, 'cause we always have to figure out like how to play the music on who's going to do the actual notes on this stuff, but maybe we can do, I bet we could come up with like a karaoke version of it and they can maybe sing along with it. That could be fun.
Yeah, like we were having a plan to just do some really bare bones like jamming for adventure games, like Trolls and myself and Robert Holmes and all of that. But
Yeah.
it seems like a big production to get everything set up and all
It
of
is a
that.
lot.
So yeah, we might
Yeah.
have to do like a Mariochi style karaoke going
Something
on
that would
there.
flow a little easier. Yeah. Those things can be a little tricky and awkward sometimes. I'm not gonna lie, depending on like how well it's done. A
Right.
sing along or jam, you know what I mean? But
So speaking of that seventh guest project, one thing
yeah.
I did, and for anyone who's not familiar, Eric came on the Era 47 podcast we did a couple months ago when we were talking about that project as well. And that should be coming out soon, right?
Yeah, I think they're sending things off to the press here within, if it hasn't happened already, it's gonna be this month for sure. Yeah, it's rolling
I think
out.
Trolls was saying that they were starting to push that a couple weeks ago, and
Yeah.
so I bet you it's already
I said,
getting.
that was about the same time that we finished six. So yeah, it's that would line up about that time.
One thing I didn't realize at the time when we did that podcast was that there was a VR remake of Seventh Guest coming out around the same time that
Good
project.
timing. Great
I had
timing.
no
Was that?
idea until afterward. I was on my
None of
VR.
us did.
I was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
None of it. Well, I you guys didn't even know that it was going to be popping off until like halfway through the project, right?
No, yeah. No, it was news. Yep.
Good timing.
For sure. For sure.
And speaking of remakes, remasters, etc., I think it's funny that we've seen all of these remakes of and remasters of adventure games like Monkey Island, Seventh Guest, puzzle games in that case. But I think a lot of people arguably would say that King's Quest VI is maybe the most popular King's Quest title, perhaps arguably the most popular Sierra adventure game. Possibly, but we've never really seen any attempts to remake or remaster anything like that.
I know, and I don't know why that is. Like, is it because of like a copyright? Because what stopped anyone from doing it with Day of the Tentacle, for example,
Right,
which
yeah,
was a
exactly.
beautiful remake, and that thing was like to the T, like
Yeah.
it was beautifully done. I have it seems pretty logical that stuff like that would start happening on the Sierra side for sure. And I would
I would
love to be
love
a
to see
part of
a
it.
version of an update of King's Quest VI featuring your rendition of the soundtrack. I think that would be really incredible.
Sign me up. I would jump on that in a
I
heartbeat. I would love doing that.
that maybe there's some more difficulty because, like with Day of the Tentacle, obviously LucasArts kind of went for a more cartoony style that I feel like translates a little better to line art, modern line art, and stuff, whereas you had these like the Sierra games, you had these digitized actors who were then post-processed and then kind of put into these hand-painted backgrounds, and it's all just like kind of a mixed media formula that kind of worked at the time, but if you pull the thread a little too much, then it kind of unravels, I think, when you try to update it.
Good point. Yeah, it's there's got to be a there's a pretty fine balance there, I'm sure, of like how far to push your upscaler.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I see what you mean. It wasn't Day of the Tentacle, certainly wasn't as line arty as like Full Throttle. But
Sure.
yeah, I see what you mean. That it definitely lined up.
It translated better to line art, is what I should
Yeah,
to say. But yeah.
for sure.
And we had that King's Quest reboot in what, 2015, 2016?
2015. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Eric, you are an adventure game fan. You're a King's
Yes.
Quest fan. What made you jump to King's Quest, though? I know you mentioned that that you used to play it when you were younger. Was it just a nostalgia thing, or was it just natural for you to want to put something else out like that? I'm trying to find a way to jump into talking about adventure games, and I'm just I can't get there.
The
I can't get there. It's terrible. But
same way.
yeah. How about you just tell us why you like King's Quest V and VI, the game? That's way better. I'm editing
That's
the crap out of that.
fair. Well, you know, it's I was kind of forced into it in the best way possible because my dad was into computers. We had Commodore, like probably most of us did, because they were so cheap. And so we started out with that, and then it was cool. I liked playing on cartridge games because they didn't take 50 years to load. But oops, sorry about that. My dad finally brought a compact 386 home that had Windows 3.1 on it one time. And
SX or DX?
yeah, SX16, the slowest 386 you can
Oh man,
get.
yeah, that's all right. Mine was a
And
25, SX 25.
yeah, so it only had 256K of video RAM, so no matter what you did, you could not get 256 colors in Windows. So it was really only effectively a DOS rig, which was great. I mean, compared to my Commodore, my mind was blown, right? So we had it for probably 6 months or so, and then my grandma had a friend who was also into computers, and she happened to have a copy of King's Quest V. And she was telling her friend about me and that we just got this computer, and she's like, "Well, why don't you borrow this game?" So we installed her copy on our computer. Yes, I realized we should have gotten our own, but we didn't. And I played it. I didn't have the manual, so there was copy protection to fight up against.
Is the
But
disc version, or
disc version, yep. But my mind was
it was
completely blown.
real,
Yeah, it
real
was.
copy protection?
Yeah. But it was, I mean, coming from Qbert, it was quite the thing to see King's Quest VI, even with a PC speaker. It didn't have a sound card or anything. But I played the ever living daylights out of that game and completely was just obsessed with it. Eventually bought a hint book so I could get through it. I was only like, what, 9 or 10 years old. I got through it, loved it. And around that time, my friends heard that I was into it and were playing it, and they're like, "Oh, well, there's six now. Six just came out." And they had played it and they were telling me about it, and they're like, "There's a genie and there's islands and you have a magic map and it's super cool." And I was,
Mints.
yeah, mint, yeah, all of it. So the mint thing is what, that was the camp that straw. But
It just keeps coming back. There we go.
Ooh.
Man, your
So,
grandma had King's Quest V. My grandma had gardening and chores. Your grandma's
yeah,
cool.
right. I know. And then my friend's mom was the one who was really into the adventure games, the one who got me into six. She's the type of gal who would spend like, 2 or 3 weeks playing through Laura Bow and things like that, and she loved it,
Sweet.
every bit of it. But my friends and I, they booted up six. They had a sound card, so not only was it like, the next new game with really rad storyline, six, it's how can you go wrong? And then also the music. And yeah, I was blown. My mind was blown away. Like it, and then I begged my dad for a solid year to get a sound card. I actually saved up my own money and bought one, and he got all mad at me and made me return it. And then, like a month later, he brought home another sound card and a CD-ROM drive. And then we got a C.
Sweet.
So then we had the CD. So then I had to buy the CD version of Six, and that was even better because God, the voice acting, right?
Yeah,
So
yeah.
good. So yeah, and then I got the 5-foot 10 pack, which had a copy of King's Quest V on CD on it, and then I had to listen to Cedric, and yeah, that's a whole nother topic.
Oh,
We know
come
your history.
on. He gets a bad rap. He gets a
He does,
bad
you know,
rap.
as a young kid playing King's Quest V with no outside influence, Cedric did not bother me. But yeah, looking back.
Let me ask you a question. So you notice how at the beginning of King's Quest V, you got the wizard, can't think of what his name is off the top of
Mordecai?
my head. Sure. He
Sorry.
gives you a white snake in which
Oh,
you consume. That's you're supposed to
perfect.
be able to be able
Talk with
to be
animals.
friendly, talk to animals. Man, animals rip the crap out of you in King's Quest V. Talking to them
Oh, yeah.
helps hardly at all. I mean, give me a crap. Like, you're supposed to be able to be friends with these guys. No, I think they just hate you
Right?
more.
I
And
mean, you could
what's
argue
funny,
that. Go ahead.
how are we able to talk to Cedric before we had the white snake
That's
too? Like
magic.
that,
That's
yeah, that was
magic
just
from the same guy.
okay.
What is his name? Corbin or
Crispin.
Crispin. Yeah.
Crispin offered.
Yeah, Crispin. That's right. The slow walker.
The funny
Yep.
thing is, you could argue that Cedric is not remotely helpful too. I mean,
He's
kind
very
of
helpful. I will die on this hill. He'll tell you
Ooh, I want to hear more.
every single time you need to save. If he's scared about something, save your game. Right
Yeah.
there, you hit save. I'm not going in that house. Oh, you save your game because you're about to get beaten in the back of the head.
You
I'm
know what?
not
I
going
never
in that
thought about it.
forest.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's actually true. He's a war he's a he's a he's not an owl, he's a canary.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure he likes snakes.
Yeah.
I have nothing to go on, but I'm going to defend him.
Love that.
Anytime you're playing a Roberta Williams game, you should just save on every screen. So,
I actually launched a website, cedricmemes.com. I hope it's still up. I should actually log into it every now and then. But there's a few guys on some of the Facebook groups that are just phenomenal at creating Cedric memes. And so
yes.
I reached out to them and I'm like, dude, we need to just host all these finally. And I did so. And then in so doing, realized that because GoDaddy is not awesome, that I actually erased my whole entire main website, which had all my blogs and my entire DOS game collection cataloged and like all of it. It was just deleted and gone. And there was no way of getting it back because it overwrote it. And I was like, GoDaddy, you've got to be kidding me. Like, there's
Oh my
literally
God.
no way. And I looked at like the Wayback Machine, you know, all the archives on the internet. No one had anything on. I don't know. I'll probably redo my website
Niche.
one day,
Too
but
niche.
yeah.
Wow.
But I've tried my hand at a Cedric meme before. I made a I think that the first screen of Doom, I replaced the Doom guy's face with Cedric and then replaced the enemy with a sprite of a snake. That was my one
nice. That's a
creation.
good one. I like that.
Oh
So
man.
it
So
sounds like your first adventure game was King's Quest V. So I believe that was mine. I believe it was Josh's too.
and
So,
mine, yeah,
oh,
that's the first
really?
one I beat that I was able to beat. And I think I played my I watched my friend play Space Quest One, I believe, before that. But yeah, that's our all right, go team.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
cool. It's such a landmark title, you know,
I
because
love it.
introduced so many things. I mean, I think it was the first one that was in 256 colors, if I'm not mistaken. It
Is
was the,
it the first 256 color?
well, at least the first
Or
Sierra
King's
game. I don't
Quest.
know about, yeah, I don't know about all adventure games, but
Definitely
I'm sure
voices.
Island beat it, I don't know. But
First for voice acting, not that it
first for
was good.
voice acting, for better or worse.
And if anybody knows, I'm just going to throw this out there, and maybe one day someone will know and we'll get an answer. But if anybody knows the name of the narrator who did the voice acting for King's Quest V, it doesn't seem to be common knowledge. And I would love to know who that is.
Yeah, I never thought about that. It's not on Mobi Games or anything.
Not that we can find, yeah.
Oh my goodness. That's
And
great.
not
You
even
asked.
like Josh
Yeah.
or Roberta or anybody knows or remembers.
What? That's crazy to
I
me.
know,
They don't know who was the first narrator of an adventure game. That is crazy.
yeah.
Yeah,
Exactly.
the
We want to
first with
find out.
the drop down icon interface, which obviously became iconic of this the whole genre, at
And that
least.
was another point, like we were talking about earlier, right? Where things definitely split apart from the old AGI to the new SCI interface. And yeah, that was that create that ruffled some feathers too.
I mean, you might
Yeah,
call
the
it.
diehard AGI guys.
Man,
Oh, yeah.
I love the. I know a lot of people absolutely hate mazes, and I don't like them, but I loved the what is it, the thieves in the desert, the
Oh yeah, the
open
bandit camp.
sesame.
Oh yeah.
That
The
is, I love
bandits.
that so much. When I think of King's Quest V, that is the
Yep.
first that I think of is, hiding. They're first of all the water. You got to have that beautiful water, then hiding behind the rock, and then letting them go. Oh man, that was so cool. And
Yeah.
the cave, and dying in the cave, that sucked, but it's a cool way to go,
Yeah,
Speaking of
that
that.
was fun. I loved the desert, and that was one of the more fun songs. If I remember right, when we asked Mark Siebert on a prior podcast what his favorite song that he worked on for King's Quest V was that he did, and I'm pretty sure he said it was the bandit theme.
Yeah.
Super fun song. Yeah, for sure.
And it really gave us that sort of that iconic what I think of if you had to narrow down a theme for the King's Quest series, I think of that opening overture or I guess closing overture for King's Quest V as being sort of the
Yeah.
central theme of the series. And they use the beginning of it for subsequent King's Quest intros, title screens, and stuff, but
Yeah.
we did a re-rendition of it for the reboot as well.
Yeah, you're talking about the title screen where you're
Well,
selecting
not just the
different.
title screen, but also the title screen ditty plus the entire medley, or at least the first part of the medley at the end credits. That's
Post
sort of
game medley.
that iconic King's Quest theme.
Yep. Yeah,
Now.
they do a really good job at like at maintaining the theme throughout the games, I feel like. And we were talking about this too a little bit before, where in six, there are several points in the game where you'll hear the same theme. For example, like at the bookworm, you'll hear that same theme at the loading screen of the Isle of Beast, because bookworm and dangling participle, right? It's the same song. It's just played differently. But on a subconscious level, I mean, maybe that helps some gamers, figure out, hey, these two go together. Not only
Yeah.
do they look alike, but
I
yes.
never pieced that together.
Yeah,
Well,
things like
never.
that. The music
There's
plays
a
a big
lot of
part.
subtext going on there. I think that when the dangling participle itself, I always thought it's a half dragon, half possum, right?
Yeah, or
You got
something.
your dangling
Or
there.
half Yoda.
Well,
Nobody knows.
that's where you get the initial, the D and the P, is kind of a hint too. I don't know. That's what I thought, but yeah, there's a lot of
Yeah.
subtext on there. And when you go into the when you first have your meeting with the wazir toward the beginning of the game, that theme is basically a dark version of Girl in the Tower, right?
No. Are you serious? I don't know any of these recurring
Mm-hmm.
themes. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's the same melody. It's just
You're
played a little.
right. Yeah,
You
that's
know what I'm talking
another
about?
one.
When you go in to meet the wazir for the first time?
I do. Yeah,
Yeah.
I just did the song.
Yeah, I was gonna say the melody for
Yeah.
Girl.
You're right. It actually is. That's awesome.
Wow,
Yeah, that's
this
just
is
another one
great.
that ties back. But yeah, I
Yo,
didn't even
Jeff. Fair, you're in the
pick that
tower
up
that
there.
the girl is in, so it makes sense
Yeah.
that it's playing, but
Yeah.
yeah.
did you ever notice that at the beginning, where King Graham in five, we're talking about where King Graham is flying and subsequently falling. And do you know that he falls like 300 feet
And
down
just
and
lands in a little stream.
lands in a puddle of water?
Like
That's
a
strange.
three-inch puddle.
Yeah, you die every single possible way in the game, except you don't die from a 300-foot fall. That's King's Quest V for you, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh man, I love it. And I was going to say that's quite impressive that that was the first one you beat too, because there is a lot of moon logic in that game. I think I probably say this on every podcast I've ever done about King's Quest, and that is that I will never say that the writing in five is good, because it's just not. But it was a fun
Neither
game.
will
It's linear.
Roberta.
Yeah, and it's just, pretty moony moon logic.
Yeah.
But
That was a game though that everybody had. And so like me and my friends, that was what we did. We went home and all of us, we all kept our own maps of like the desert and like collectively, but from afar, like five or six of us beat King's Quest after like 2 years or something along those lines. But yeah, that was my first, yeah, I don't think it was 2 years, but that was my first game.
Well, it was such a
Awesome.
showcase for CD-ROM technology too at the time. I think it came packaged with a lot of CD-ROM drives. And when you really think about game presentation today, all the things that we kind of take for granted, voice acting, orchestral score, all this kind of stuff, the kind of cinematic presentation, I feel like you can kind of trace it all back to King's Quest V in a lot of ways. The kind of they're trying to step up to the next echelon of production values to compete
Yeah.
with Hollywood, and
There we go again on the cutting edge for sure.
yeah. So
Sierra pioneered a lot.
let me ask both of you guys. So you guys are both big King's Quest VI fans, along with myself. Why do you think that King's Quest VI stands apart from almost every other? Go for it. Yeah, Eric in the back.
Jane Jensen. Ding 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 ding. Okay. There you go, right there. It's like we know, Jeff.
When I was interviewing Roberta Williams, she asks me what my favorite game was. I'm not gonna lie, I'm not gonna bullsh, I'm not gonna crap her. All right. I said my favorite Sierra game is Gabriel Knight 1. And nobody can begrudge me for saying that, okay? And she
Absolutely
goes,
not.
oh, okay. Well, what was your favorite King's Quest game? And then I'm
That's
like,
you get a
ooh,
double whammy,
this is
Roberta.
rough. I mean, I said, oh, King, like King Twist, which she goes, oh, well, I taught Jane very well. Like, I don't know what to tell you. I'm not gonna lie to you. Like,
That's awesome.
well, I
No,
think.
we all love Roberta. I mean, look at what else she did. My God, that woman, what an incredible, amazing writer,
Amazing career.
artist.
I mean, we the game industry owes her just an incalculable amount. I mean, we just wouldn't be where we are today.
Well, just look at what a legacy they've left, whether they even realize it or appreciate it as much as we do or not. It's there, you know what I mean? No
For
matter
sure. I don't
what.
believe that they know.
So,
I don't believe that they
not
know.
to the
I just,
level.
yeah.
It's
I
a lot of
mean,
people, like millions and millions of people play these games around the world, you know?
I'm pretty sure they could start a cult. And there'd be
And
people
maybe
that
that's what
repeat.
this is.
I
Is
think
this what
we're in
people
it. Following, yeah.
it?
How do we capitalize? How do we monetize this Williams cult? Let's figure
Well,
this out.
not by doing vinyls. That costs a lot of money.
Right.
Let me just say
Purely
that.
a labor of love, I would say, right? Like
Yeah.
you're obviously not, no one's getting rich off of doing this.
Yeah, no, no.
You were talking a little bit earlier about sort of the variation in sort of the themes of locations and stuff you go to in King's Quest VI, and how that kind of reflects in the music. And you do hear a lot of I mean, obviously in you've got kind of an Arabian Nights theme in the first area, and then you've got sort of an Alice in Wonderland theme with Isle of Wonder, a Beauty and the Beast theme, Greek mythology theme, all this stuff. So I mean, he had to have been an incredibly versatile musician to kind of capture all of these kind of moods. How did that pose any difficulties for you in adapting the soundtrack?
I can't say enough about Chris Braman. He's definitely like my top two or three favorite Sierra composers or video game. His career was so short, though. I wish he would have been around longer, because he could have really touched a lot of things, and yeah, it would have been great. But yeah, One thing that I say and will continue to say about him is that he's really, in my opinion, unmatched in his uncanny ability to match the mood of a room with any given song. And I mentioned this on the last podcast I did too, that I could play these final versions that I did of basically anything for my wife or anybody else listening, and I could ask them, what do you think is happening in this scene? And literally 9 out of 10 times they could nail it on the head just by listening to the song. Like, yeah, it's just I can't do that. Not even close. I've written a few things here and there over the years, but nothing to a theme or something that was for a specific purpose. But yeah, and you're right. There's all of that. Arabian, Beauty and the Beast, Greek. There, yeah, the whole castle stuff. There's Brahms, there's organ, yeah, it's just incredible.
Yeah, a lot of toy boxy kind of stuff.
Yeah, like the jolly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, tons of lot of percussion. And so
Oh,
another
yeah,
thing too
Druids.
is,
That's very percussive too, and that's another mood too.
but keep in mind too, when I say percussion, I'm also referring to things like other keyboard type instruments, marimba, xylophone, celesta. Those are all very percussive instruments, but tonal in nature, like a piano. So yeah, a ton of that just throughout. And I just it was really cool, like I mentioned earlier too, how he was able to use all of those different instruments in such an ambient sort of way, you know?
Let me ask both of you. Oh, go for it.
Oh,
Yeah, go
sorry.
for it.
So you were also talking about how, King's Quest V, in contrast to King's Quest VI, is more linear. And I think it was interesting because I don't know if this will still be the case, but when you look at the Wikipedia entry on open world games, like just the subject of open world games, King's Quest VI is listed as one of the first open world games. And I never kind of thought of it that way, but that whole second act, you sort of have the run of the place. You're kind of going around doing, things in
Living in the
non-open.
map. Yeah. You
Interesting
kind of solve.
concept. Yeah,
That's
I
a
don't know if I fully buy it, but I guess as a proto open world game, I could kind of see it, but.
yeah, maybe like a predecessor in a way, but I guess when I think open world, I'm thinking like Skyrim, where you can literally run over any log or rock or hill or jump off a cliff. Whereas with these, that really wasn't built in to any of them. Yeah, but
Guess
I guess I could
that's our
see it from
modern day
like,
thought of what open world is, because
yeah,
open world
that's
has
more.
advanced
I
so
think of that more as
much,
like sandbox, which is has a lot of overlap in the Venn diagram. But open world, I think of as just sort of the way you can approach problem solving, which is that you can kind of approach it in any order, sort of, which isn't strictly true in that or really hardly any adventure game. But yeah, you can kind of see the roots of it a little bit.
Yeah, definitely, because you're bouncing all over the place. You literally, unless you know the game or the story you've played it through before, like you don't know which island you're supposed to go to next at any given time. Honestly,
And you can massively screw up. You can skip an entire third of the game if you just take the easy route,
And we were talking about one thing too. I'd like, if I may, just stem off of that a little bit too, Jeff, is that. And I was even under this impression as well when I had first started, working on this, because I had only ever done really two static versions of it. There's the long and there's the short version, just two. But
There's 12 different things, I think.
there are a lot, actually, because there's a lot of different ways you can do a lot of different things. And depending on what order you do those things in, completely has to change the outcome. Otherwise, the story wouldn't work. So there's a lot of thought and a lot of like extra even art sequences and scenes that had to go into it for the random few people who would have done it this way as opposed to the
I didn't
mainstream,
know about that either until I was hearing the other the
permutations of who can kind of be at the wedding, and obviously the biggest contrast is if you don't go to the land of the dead, you don't revive Cosima's parents. It's really just you and Cosima and a couple other people at the wedding. But if you
And
get
who
the
is this guy?
maximum
Now he's
effort,
our king.
you get everyone, but also there's different permutations there too, where like I remember doing a playthrough, from memory a couple of years ago. and I completely forgot to go into the treasure room. And you have to go into the treasure room, pull up the blanket. This is in the castle when you're sneaking around the castle. You pull up the blanket, you look at all, you have to look at all four of the treasures on the table, and then finally it'll click for Alexander, you know, the full deviousness of the wazir. And that's what unites all of the leaders of the islands at your wedding. And if you don't do that, they don't show up. It's just a crazy little nuance. And you can tell. And another thing is, like, you know, we're talking about massively screwing up. You can go into the land of the dead. You can take the long route. If you forget to pick up that River Styx water before you go back to the land
Or
of the
the
living.
coins.
Yeah, or the coins. You're in a no-win state, you know, and you could
The
get.
coins is the one the more common, or at least I think that you
Oh,
know,
it's
I
the River
wonder which
Styx
one
water.
I've beaten it twice, and I'm wondering, like, I took the obviously the easy road where you just take the back door essentially, and I don't know what the other version that I'd be. I always assumed that it was like
Actually,
okay, I took
the
the
easy way
long
is
way.
the front door. The hard way is creating a back door.
The back door. Well, okay, maybe I'm
The
confusing the
standard
rules.
short version is when you sneak in as a handmaiden,
Oh,
with
yeah,
Yuli's
that's
dress.
the rule.
That's the
So
standard short version.
let's talk production really quick one more time and compare 5-6 to 2-7, because if 5 it's something new, it's cool, you got all this these sounds and all this yada yada. 6 is so full of charm. You got all these different perspectives, you know, that is being in the arts, the three-dimensional type of aspects, the viewpoints and everything. And it really seems that's where there's so much charm in 6. Then we go into 7, which by all measures is larger production, Disney-esque. However, and I'm asking both of you this, if my observation is wrong, it just didn't seem like it had the charm. It wasn't full. Like I'm talking sound, music, ambiance. It seems like it almost went backwards from 6 to 7. What's your thoughts on that?
Go ahead, Jeff.
Sorry, I didn't want to steamroll you because I definitely have thoughts. I think King's Quest VII is a always been a highly divisive game in the series, and for me, I'm a huge fan of King's Quest VII. To me, it goes right up there with King's Quest V and VI. I played all three of them in pretty quick succession. So to me, they're sort of one saga. And then I went back and played from the beginning when I got the King's Quest collection. Yeah, I love King's Quest VII. I do think that, you know, it gets a lot of I would say undue criticism for being Disney-esque, and you know, maybe it's on the more simplistic
Doesn't have to
kid-friendly.
be criticism. It's Disney-esque, and that was what they were trying for. No big
Well,
deal.
a lot of it, to be fair, a lot of fans did not take to that. They didn't want Disney-esque. They wanted, you know, I think that they like Eric said, you know, King's Quest V and VI kind of go hand in hand, and they really built up a momentum. And I think if you were playing them in real time and you were waiting, you know, a couple of years between games and you've been following the series the whole time, I could see how maybe King's Quest VII might be a little bit of a disappointment, a little bit of a letdown from that momentum that was built up from five and six. But for me, I thought it was delightful. You know, I think
Production though.
it's a great. I think the production's amazing. I don't think that the soundtrack is as good, I
No,
will say.
that's kind of what I mean. Yeah, it just doesn't seem full. It's missing something, and I can't even place like what it is, but it just
Well, to be
doesn't
fair, it always
seem.
depends on what kind of hardware or hardware emulation you're using to listen to these soundtracks, and maybe Eric can speak on that too. I don't I know you have thoughts on King's Quest VII as well, but you know, if you listen to, I forget what the patch is, but you listen to the right roll and sound patch on King Quest VII if you're playing in Scum VM, it sounds so much more full and beautiful and you know, lush than if you're just playing the general MIDI that comes out of the box, you know. And same for King's Quest V and VI as well. And I think five and six were built around MT32. I could be wrong, but anyway, Eric, I think you have lots of thoughts on this, so.
So I'll work a little bit backwards. And a lot of what you just said is exactly like what I would have said verbatim, honestly, about seven.
All right.
But as far as
Conversation's over. Let's go. No, I'm
no, I
just
have some
kidding.
points. But as far as the music, five was built on MT32. 6 on a sound canvas. And then 7 was actually not MIDI, but there is a MIDI version that is used and played in the version 2 of the game. Version 2 is when all the bugs were fixed, is when the and also when they released the full standalone DOS version. You can play the game in DOS with if you have version 2 and load up. I believe it uses Sound Canvas, or even MT32, you can pick. So there's your MIDI for that, and that's probably what Jeff's referring to when he refers to it sounding more full when you're doing that. But yeah, it's, I mean, here we are again, right? It's because they Sierra, whether it was a good thing or a bad thing, they always had to be on the bleeding edge, and that's just happened to be the era that we're in. And people's acceptance of it did not align with their expectation, because our expectation was this is what we've had for the last 5 years between 5 and the end, between 5 and 7. You know what I mean? And so it definitely took a step up as far in terms of technology, because that's, I think it's just where the world was at that time. And there, it had to be that way, because that's what Sierra had to do to stay successful. They were always on the cutting edge of everything. And so I wasn't disappointed in that sense, but it certainly wasn't a package deal like I always visualize 5 and 6 being. Like, I mean, they're kind of the two chapters of the same story, if you will. They could be a single book, in my opinion, but are two chapters of it. But 7 kind of came along, and yeah, it's still the royal family, whom I wish we still knew their last name. That would be cool if we knew.
Kings Quest reboot says it's Cracker, but
Cracker, of course. Cracker.
that's hilarious. Hilarious.
I see what you did there. But yeah,
too,
7's
thank
kind of
you.
a standalone game on its own, really. It's a great story. It's fun to play. I love 7. And if let's be honest, 5, 6, and 7 were the three best of the series. One was I like the I really like the one remake. And if you're into AGI, maybe you'll disagree, but a lot of people love 3, and a
Two.
lot of people love 4 even more. And 4 is a lot of people's favorite, but I just didn't play 4 a lot as a kid, and it just doesn't have that place in my heart that
Well, the
I
King's
think it
Quest is
does for
like
a lot of
four
people.
different stories. Anyway, it seems like because they do kind of bounce back and forth between characters, and and I do agree that even though like it went between Graham and Alexander and 5 and 6, that felt like an extension. But Hey, I've always felt that King's Quest 6 is so much more sophisticated of a story than King's Quest 5 is. And you really have these still have these very rudimentary fairy tale aspects. It really crossed the entire series, but King's Quest 5 is still very it's very fairy tale oriented. If you have a general, knowledge of Aesop or Brothers Grimm or whatever, you kind of get a sense of what you need to do. But King's Quest 6, while it has some themes from like Arabian Nights or Alice in Wonderland or whatever, it's it sort of
Themes,
adds a little more texture rather than, and there's sort of this political intrigue story going on, which the series had never really attempted to do before. It was always kind of a black and white hero versus villain story.
Six, the writing in 6, it has to be the best, right? It's
It's
just
almost too good
perfect.
for what the King's Quest series was ever trying to accomplish, so much more sophisticated of a story. And
I
that's
think
no slam at Roberta Williams. That's not what she was trying to make fairy tale games, and that's what King's Quest is,
And it's
and
still
that's
a fairy
also
tale game. It's just the level of,
and
it's awesome.
it set the expectations too high, unfortunately, for King's Quest 7,
I think
because
that's
it did
true.
go back so far when it comes to story. I mean, there is hardly any complexity to the story.
No, I think that that's a little unfair because I do think that King's Quest 7
Compared
has,
to 6, though, is
sure, compared to 6, compared to 5, I think it has more. I would argue. I mean, maybe some similar themes. You've got a mad sibling trying to get revenge. I don't know. It's very Disney-esque, and that you can tell that that's what they were going for. She's sort of a cross between Malicia, the villain. She's sort of a cross between Ursula and Jafar, and she it's very It's trying so hard to be Disney. It's trying so hard to appeal to a new audience, so they leave out all those elements you were talking about. Like, it's not the next chapter of the story. It could take place at any point in the King's Quest timeline, really. It's standalone. There's no mention of King Graham, which is insane to me. I mean, he's the king
You're
in Kingdom.
right.
And I think that there were some King Graham lines or scenes that were cut because I know I think Denny Delk is credited as King Graham in the credits for King's Quest VII, but there's no actual surviving lines from any of his work. So,
Of LucasArts fame, he does is he
yes.
supposed to? Oh wow.
Of voice acting fame, I would say.
Yeah.
They
Yeah.
kind
Well,
of get
that's
around,
true. That's true. Yeah. All right,
But yeah.
let's do this, guys. We've been going for an hour and 20 minutes,
Oh,
so
wow. Really?
let's have a little bit of fun here. Let's finish this episode with a top five. So, and this just came to my head of what I've been trying to think this whole time of what our top five is going to be. And we're having a lot of fun talking about King's Quest, so I don't want to kill that. So let's choose go around in a circle and choose each of our five favorite King's Quest moments. And we're doing this on the fly. And so, and we're going to go around in a circle one at a time. Eric, you're the guest, so you get to go first. Make sure
Man.
you choose your best one because we may steal it. So,
You are
going around.
definitely throwing me on the spot right now. Holy
That's the whole
moly.
point of these. This is
I
the
have a
great part. Yeah.
Okay, well,
Yeah.
right now in the mindset that I've been in for the last several years, I have a really hard time not picking this list based off of like the music.
No, that's fine. Everybody has a different perspective. That's the great part. And it's
Sure.
better when you don't have a lot of time to think about it.
Yep. Okay. So here we go. I'm gonna say is this any King's Quest?
Yeah, any King's Quest.
Any moment from any King's Quest. Sheesh. Okay. So the whole nightmare thing and having to make that spell and then getting on nightmare and being transported to somewhere crazy that's not even on the map. And the song that plays during that's my top. I would say I love that.
All right, hold on. And now we're gonna go to Jeff
Oh, I
next.
got it.
We're gonna go around in a circle one at a time. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Nightmare is definitely toward the top of my list. So I'll leave that one. Just because the music is so incredible there. Another kind of music forward moment, also from King's Quest VI, and I mentioned earlier, is that first meeting with the Wazir when Alexander washes up on the shore of the Green Isles, and then you get into the castle. And it can play out a couple different ways depending on what you've done before you go into the castle. But there's so much tension there, and it's supported so well by the really dark, ominous music that's playing. It's just a really incredible scene, and it looked so incredible. It blew my mind when I was a kid because it was these digitized paintings of real people. And it was so up close, and it looked like a movie scene. And it's something that you didn't really see in games at that time. And it just felt so cinematic and cool. And it always sticks out as one of the iconic moments in not just King's Quest VI, but all of early adventure games to me.
All
Yeah, for
right.
sure. Cool.
So I'm gonna go. I know yours have been based off music so far, but I'm gonna choose okay, so when you die in King's Quest VI, obviously you always see, you're going into the land of the dead, yada yada. But then, of course, I'm gonna choose where you actually get to see that moment and not dying. That is such a cool aspect of King's Quest VI. So that's my one. All
That
right,
is
your
cool,
turn.
and that was a point that I actually mentioned is at one point was that I didn't have to write a standalone dying song because it was already built into the standard soundtrack.
Oh yeah.
It's nice.
Let me ask you this, Josh. Did you, when you, the very first time you ever played that scene, when you walked on that screen, did you think you had
Didn't
died?
think we were gonna. No, I didn't. I really didn't. I mean, it's hard for me to say this far in, like
It's a
later
Roberta
in
Williams game. You never know what's going to happen around the corner.
it was definitely different though, at that point. And so I don't think so, but who knows? Maybe I did. Did you?
I think for a quick second, I think
Yeah,
I
maybe.
did such a at that point I died so many times it was like a habit.
You're conditioned.
Walking up to me like, oh crap, what did I do? Like
Also, you didn't have the narrator telling you how stupid you are at
that's true.
that point.
Yeah, that was an awesome part of six for sure.
Eric.
I think I'm gonna combine a few different things from King's Quest V into my whole next answer, and that is the I don't want to call them cutscenes, but every so often in five there is a close-up, like a really detailed painting image of a scene. I'm thinking the gnomes underground when he was handing Grandma shoes,
The harpies.
Cosima in the castle, and Graham staring at her weirdly. And then
Weirdly.
there's a couple others.
Keeping Tom in there.
Yeah. But that artwork really stands out to me and always has, and they're my favorite parts of that particular game. So
All right, Jeff.
mine also kind of plays right off of that. Literally, the next thing I had was I wrote it down as Ripped Graham, but that's first time you get that close up of the entire royal family toward the end of King's Quest V, where they're all lined up, and you never got to see them all lined up in that much detail before and close up. And Cosima's there too, and as we know, she's going to be a part of the family in the next game. And also to kind of glom onto another one, another element of what you've been talking about, that Cosima's theme music in King's Quest V, that is Girl in the Tower that they use in King's Quest V. So they really thought that in advance, and you get to hear that music playing when you were close up on her, and yeah, very cool.
Okay. I'm gonna go with one that's not necessarily a good memory, but it's definitely memorable. I'm gonna go in King's Quest V, where King Graham in the speaking to the witch in the forest. What is this? Your forest? And basically trash talking the worst trash talk ever. Do you own it? Oh man, it's funny. It's hilarious. Like, but as a child, looking at it as from a child's point of view to an adult, I'm like, oh, all right.
Next thing you
That's
know,
kind of
he's just straight
childish.
up dead.
I am rubber, you are glue. Let's go. All right, Eric, your turn.
Are there memorable moments? Honestly, the first time I played King's Quest One, it was the SCI remake. So I have good memories of that game as well. Probably also because Ken Allen did the music for it. But I remember, not that it was super difficult or anything, but I just remember beating that game, and things that stick out were like getting to the top of the beanstalk, which was way easier, it turns out, on the SCI than the AGI. Probably would have completely failed in AGI, but yeah, I think just that game as a whole, it does hold a dear place in my heart, and I love it. So the remake, anyway. I don't think I've actually ever finished a full playthrough of the first version. I should do that sometime.
It's fun,
Of
yeah.
the remake or of the actual
Sorry,
game?
yeah, the SCI remake, the
Okay.
EGA.
One of my favorite moments, and it's not part of the traditional King's Quest series, but I don't know if you guys have beat the reboot, but the whole last chapter of the reboot,
Of which one? You talk about number two?
2015.
Oh, the
No, not
2015.
2015
Oh,
reboot.
okay.
The series reboot, the anthology,
Odd Gentleman.
which, if you're not familiar with it, was made by another company called The Odd Gentlemen, that they released it in episodic format, and they were trying to kind of revitalize the game, the series. But the way it ends is just such amazing fan service, and I don't want to spoil anything, but it's very gut-wrenching, and there's some just really amazing moments in it where you it, the whole game's in full 3D and everything, and there's a moment where you're kind of going through Graham's fractured memory, because he's old, and you kind of get transported to this like SCI 2 version of the game where it's got the drop down, the point and click interface, and it's all sprite work and hand painted backgrounds and MIDI music, and it's just a really mind-blowingly like touching, heartbreaking scene. So I really enjoyed
Wow.
that fan service. So
I have to play that. I've only
I
played
do
like the first
too.
couple of chapters, and that sounds really
I
cool.
did as well.
Yeah.
It
It's
wasn't
really incredible.
fun.
The whole last chapter is really good, and I would recommend if you don't have the gumption to play through the whole thing, because it is very like puzzle game puzzly in some ways, you could just watch a playthrough of it on YouTube and get the full kind of emotional weight of it. But yeah.
I'll have to do that.
Cool.
All right. So, okay. Memorable scenes, King's Quest 7. Again, not necessarily a positive memory, but what was it? Was it a Mockingbird?
Oh,
Or
the
the it was it was
mockery.
oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was annoying, but that whole chapter or that whole area was just loud and
Yeah.
obnoxious. Like
Very aggressive. Yes. I thought that those jokes were so funny. I would say he's got so many of them. It's so
they
like,
actually were pretty good.
yeah, you just sit there, and the voice acting was actually really good on it too. Like kind of this Gilbert Gottfried kind of vibe going on. Very insulting, insult comedy, and you can just keep clicking on him, and he'll keep insulting you for like a good like couple minutes. It's amazing.
All right, two more, Eric.
One of my favorite parts that always sticks out, and it's funny too that Josh mentioned this, is because the bandit camp in five, that's just one of my
I knew I
favorites.
should have used that up.
Yep. It's just one of those scenes that I always think about when I think of King's Quest. Great music.
Can I tell you, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the JonTron King's Quest 5 video that he did.
I
You
don't
know who
know.
JonTron is? He used to be in Game Grumps. I don't know if you guys
Oh, yeah.
follow him or anything. He's done an old King's Quest 5, which he has since pulled down because it's just not cool enough for him. But there are fans that saved it and put it out that still has millions of views on it. Look up King's Quest 5 JonTron, and
Okay.
the way that he mentions the deaths and it speaks of that scene, it's just so funny. It's just so
Nice.
funny. Oh boy.
Sweet,
All
I'll
right,
check that
Jeff.
out.
Yeah. Go for it, Jeff.
Well, probably just because I had to skip some of mine because you guys took a lot of them. I guess
All right.
my favorite King's Quest moment would be dealing with death in King's Quest VI.
See, you just stole my last one.
Sorry.
It was awesome.
I mean, I think we could all speak on this. I think it's an incredible moment for the series. I mean, just and the whole fact that it's a moment that you can actually not like skip if you play the game a certain way. And it's such, I would say it's sort of the emotional climax of the story where, you actually have to go, and it's a great puzzle too, because it's like I mean it makes sense. It's not moon logic-y, he explains to
Great
you
puzzle.
all the things he's seen, and what's the only way to make him cry is make him reflect on the way his entire existence. And I think it's just such a an existential, like almost has no business being in a King's Quest with how like kind of emotionally charged it is. But
And
some of
dark
the
it
voice
is.
acting in the
There's
background is a
symbolism
little
in that too.
cheesy, but
I feel like there's a lot of symbolism in that too that really just drives the whole point of that scene. It was great.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we all would have taken that on that. I was picking and choosing between that and the other part of the Land of the Dead that I chose. Okay, my turn. Okay. This one is memorable just because I wanted to explore it more. Checkerboard lands, a chessboard, but I wanted to go in there. When I think of King's Quest 6, like that's one of the first things that I think of. Just I want to explore. What a missed opportunity in adventure gaming. I
You
don't
do a
know.
pretty good job of making it look pretty boring from the outside.
I mean, but
It's
you
rolling hills
might
of
be
sand
right. You actually might be right. Now that I think about, they just kind of hobble over there.
Well, I mean, not really. I mean, because they referred to it a lot too. It was on the back of the game box, and then yeah, it's
True.
just it always comes up. And it was even in the silver. Did either of you play the Silver Lining? Like, you got to explore it in the Silver Lining.
I
That was
didn't.
cool.
I never. I w but still. I played the first chapter of Silver Lining, and I've been following it for God, what, 22 years
Yeah,
now.
over long, yeah.
I've been waiting and waiting and waiting for them
You're
to release that final chapter, because I do
it's
not
not
want
gonna
to play
happen.
left hanging. I know it's not going to happen, but I'm still kind of holding on to that one. And I think that was kind of a better new King's Quest in some ways than the Odd
I
Gentleman.
liked it.
Didn't it look great? It looked
Oh yeah.
really good. I remember playing like the first hour, and I don't remember why. I think it was one of the, it's not the full game, that type of a thing. And I didn't quite understand episodic games at the time
It was
too.
new. It was definitely, I think they kind of they did that before that became a thing, because that wasn't really a thing till like the PS3, Xbox 360 era of console gaming where they started doing that.
I remember wanting to play the full game. Like, I'm going to play the full game, and it's never end up getting to it. And I'm kind of glad I didn't now, because my OCD would have just been burning for the rest of my life
So
on that.
what's in the chessboard land when you explore it in Silver Lining?
I was a little let down, because it was a little weird and random. There's like this booth that's like a traveling merchant, if I remember right, that you have to get past, and there's a puzzle thing that you have to do. It's been like freaking 18 years since I've played it, so this is really old memory. But and yeah, you end up going. There's some end screen to it as well. I don't know. Yeah, I'd have to look at it again, but I know you can go like several screens into it. It's pretty cool that you could, at least explore it for a while. So,
Whose turn is it? I think it's Eric's now.
yeah, my last one. Ironically, just one screen away. One thing that always sticks out to me is the garden in Isle of Wonder, because I love the song that Alexander plays on his flute for the Dance of the
So cool.
Wallflowers. And that's one of the songs that I can actually play on the piano as well. That little wallflower scene. It's kind of fun. But that always sticks out to me. I love that place. Lots to do in that particular screen of the game that you have to go back to several times, even though you don't think you should have to. Yeah, there's a lot happens there for setup for the rest of the game.
All right.
When speaking of setups for the rest of the game, one of my favorite moments is the intro of King's Quest IV, which, if you played King's Quest III and you beat King's Quest III, it ends on a cliffhanger with the royal family finally being reunited after what, 18 years with Alexander, and he's ready to pass the baton, and he throws his hat in the air, and then it ends on a freeze frame, and then King's Quest IV picks up right from where
That is
it
cool.
left off, and then there's this horrible tragedy that happens right then, and it's the jump in presentation between King's Quest 3 and King's Quest 4 was just so remarkable. And they went for, I mean, the increase in detail, in colors, in the they went from PC speaker to MT32, fully orchestrated, amazing cinematic soundtrack. And it's this just really weighty emotional moment where Rosella watches her father almost die, and she feels helpless, and she's trying to figure out what she can do about it. And then, then the game proceeds. But it's just it you hadn't really seen, and I played it after the fact. I played it after King's Quest V, but at that point, I feel like you hadn't really seen that kind of emotionality in games. It was pretty sophisticated for the time, I think.
Yeah, good point.
Rosella was kick-ass. She really was. And it seemed like
Not in seven,
she went
though.
backwards. Yeah, she went backwards. And
Yeah.
I mean, she did come her own in seven,
Yeah.
but she was just like, she was just a kick-ass chick
Yeah.
in four. And then what is this?
Trolls
And on
are.
that note, I first of all, I want to give some credit to the, what is it, the Tierra, the AGDI remake of number two.
Remix.
I wanted to
Oh,
have
two
that
is
in there
great.
somehow, but I, because
Honorable
that's what
mention.
It's probably my third favorite game in all King's Quest games. But
That's how, yeah.
I'm gonna choose the scene with Rosella in Seven, where she's just complaining about the boring prince to her mother. What was
Prince
his name?
Throckmorton,
Rat
he's so
Morgan, like Rat
boring.
Morgan, like. That's that I think about that like quite a bit, like, and as she just she is so tired of the idea of this, and she's gonna like jump into the river. Why not just like jump in the river? That's gonna solve your problems. I will escape you, Rat Morgan. Oh man, this is a lot of fun, guys.
Yeah,
This
super.
really was. Eric, I'm so glad to have you on again. This is the second time that we've had you on the podcast, and
Yeah, it's been a pleasure again. Like I said, I've been looking forward to it, and I'm glad we were able to squeeze it in. It's always an enjoyable evening when we get to geek out on this stuff.
it sure is. And Jeff, always a pleasure to have you, and
Thank you.
thank you for
Yeah.
everything that you do for AGAs. I don't think Jeff gets enough credit, or his name isn't on a lot of things, but Jeff does a lot of things that
Yep.
nobody knows. And I
Very
want to give
kind.
him a shout out.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yep.
Eric, tell us where we could find again the project.
So it's released digitally on my Bandcamp. I would go to twoguysrecords.bandcamp.com because then not only do you get my stuff that's a co-label, but you also get to see all of their other albums as well, like the Space Quest stuff and everything that's only ever been released digitally by them, etc. So there, as far as the vinyl campaign for King's Quest 6, again, that's bit.ly/KQ6vinyl. It's the number 6, not the Roman numeral. That'll get you straight to it. Or you can just go to diggersfactory.com and do a search for King's Quest and or King's Quest 6, however much you want to type, and it pops right up there. The campaign runs until April 14th. I have no idea what time of day it ends. I'll have to ask my support guy over there, but it's been a great campaign so far, and we still definitely need everyone's support to make it happen. It's quite expensive to do these things, and the cost of the proceeds are less than, well, I should say they're not even covering all the cost of it, like I mentioned earlier. So I'm still gonna have to send them a little money to get it done. But so all the support we can get, the better over there. Spread the word, tell your friends. It's been my passion for the last 2 years. And I really hope everyone enjoys it in either format as much as I did making it, because it was pure pleasure. And I'm a little bit unsure of what to do with my evenings at the moment. Maybe I'll have to start at a
Play
quest
some
for
games.
glory. Yeah, or just take a break. God, because we were doing that project and the Seventh Guest, 11th Hour at the same time. And then King's Chul 3 is still in the works, and that's going to be coming out right after KQ6 ends. I did a couple tracks on that as well this time. That'll be a fun project. We got some more stuff in the works for sure. So yeah, definitely stay tuned. I keep my website pretty updated with the projects that I'm at least a part of. And that's magicmapstudio.com. And there's links to my campaign and everything there as well, if that's any easier for everyone. But probably the quickest way to find my stuff.
We'll
I think it's
definitely
worth
link all
noting
that in the
that these
description.
vinyl projects, you know, if you're on the fence about whether to back this project or not, these you could think of it as an investment. These things go up astronomically in
Yeah,
value
look
after
at them on
the
eBay.
press comes out. You know,
Yeah.
if you look on eBay and you look up any of Two Guys Trolls's projects or whatever, King's Chill, Space Quest, all that kind of stuff. Those vinyls are outrageously priced on eBay, and right now is your opportunity to get in on the
Yeah,
ground
if you
floor.
want one of these, now is the time, because you're not gonna find it for cheaper on eBay, that's for sure.
And it's what, 200 copies is what you need to get to?
That's what we need to get to, but as many pledges as there are, they will make.
Need more,
And
guys.
yeah, so we don't stop there. It's not like there's only gonna be 200. We just have to hit that, and then yeah, as many people as want to pledge, get in now. Now is your time for sure. So.
Jeff, do you want people finding you?
I mean, you can you know, I'm pretty heavily involved on the backside of AGH, so you know, I'm sure if you get a hold of Josh or whatever, you'll get a hold of me. But also, you know, you can come meet me in person at the Adventure Game Fanfare this summer.
Yay.
I know that's why everyone's coming to meet Jeff. That's gonna be
Jeff and Eric.
the weekend of July 26th, which is a Friday. This will be a 3-day convention, and it's going to be an absolutely landmark historic event for adventure game fans. I don't think that anything like this has been done yet, so I'm
God, I
really,
can't wait.
yeah.
It's by far the top of my list for things I'm looking forward to this year, I'm not gonna lie.
I got nothing else to say. I don't have to do anything. Like, Jeff, you're on payroll now, buddy. Like, you're gonna have to do all my outros and intros, my friend. Oh, thank you guys so much. For
Thank you.
Jeff, for Eric, this is Joshua, and this has been the Adventure Game Hotspot podcast. Treat everybody well. We'll see you guys in the next episode. Take care.